the second hour of today's program. Alison Brown is my guest. Alison released in 2015 an absolutely gorgeous banjo album, The Song of the Banjo. She is a multiple award-winning instrumentalist, producer, is involved, actually runs with Gary Compass, which is now Compass Red House Records, Grammy Award-winning efforts coming out of there all the time. You're going to enjoy talking to Alison. The Song of the Banjo was released in 2015, and we're going to talk about that, of course, but we're going to catch up on new projects and things she's been working on since, and things you can look forward to in the future. Alison Brown, you're going to enjoy it. Really happy to welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass for the second time, Alison Brown. How are you doing, Alison?
Doing great. Thanks for having me back, Steve.
Well, I'm so happy, you know, and we have gaps in time, but there's so much going on with your recording career and also with Compass Records. I wanted to start off and just pick up a little bit on the last album, I think, that you released under your name, The Song of the Banjo. Which was on Compass and released, I think, towards the end of 2015 or sometime 2015.
Yep, that sounds right.
Yeah, and but since then, we'll get back to that in just a second because that's the big part. But I have to tell you that one of the things that is most intriguing to me about not just your music but also what Compass Records is doing, the label it's doing, are the choices that you're making and that Compass is making. I just think some of the projects are just so almost perfectly pulled together, and the success that Compass has had, let's just say since The Song of the Banjo, is just nothing short of, I mean, you stake the claim to the top rungs of recorded music, and I think it's because of the choices and the efforts made in the studio. Well, I'm thinking of the Bobby Osmore thing that just came out.
Thank you.
You know, which you just did so well.
Wow, thank you so much. Well, I really appreciate you saying that because, as you can imagine, the day-to-day effort can be a slog sometimes. So hearing you say that really really feels good. Thanks.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, I've been aware of you forever and ever and Compass since you started it. But it seems to me that Compass just keeps making this steady upward climb. And it's not just an accidental lightning in a jar. It's like quality, 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 choices, choices, choices. And even on, not even on, but on The Song of the Banjo, there are so many great decisions and so many great musicians with it that I think there's just a lot building there. And I didn't want to not have the opportunity to tell you that it's recognized, I think. And even, well, you know, even now, I'm just now playing Missy Raines, The Swept Away thing, uh-huh. which is every, I mean, it's an all-star band.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I've been almost done producing Missy's new record, and I just had this idea that it would be great to get all the female IBMA winners together. And at the time when we recorded that, Molly Tuttle was the first nominee for Guitar Player of the Year, first female nominee ever. Can you believe that?
How many years? 30 years? I can't. And then so the rest of the band.
And then she won.
She won. I know. How convenient.
Yeah, I know. It was very convenient.
So
it's a real milestone for me because, you know, for the longest time it was just me and Missy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And to be able to play in the company of just such fine female players, it's kind of a new thing, but it's hopefully the beginning of a massive trend.
I think so. And, I mean, of course, and you, Missy Raines, who I equate with, currently I put, and you may recognize this name, you probably will, I equate Missy with, there's two bass players in all of music that I know of and watch that I would put 1A, 1B, Missy and Christian McBride. I think Christian McBride in the jazz world you could almost be interchangeable as far as their ability to change things and move around and to just such dominating players. But on Swept Away, then we'll get back to the Song of the Banjo real quick. So it's Missy Raines, it's Alison Brown, it's Sierra Holtz, Becky Buller, Molly Tuttle.
Yes.
Yeah, and that was just released.
Yes, that single just came out at the end of March, and the whole record will be out in August.
Oh, that's good. Well, what other things can you tip us about before we get to The Song of the Banjo? What else is in the works? There must be so much, and I don't want you to give away any big secrets or anything. But
oh, yeah, no, I won't give away any big secrets. I produced Frank Sullivan's new record, Frank Sullivan Dirty Kitchen, and co-produced that one, and that one's coming out, I think, in September. So looking forward to that. And then, yeah, we've got a pretty full summer release schedule on Compass, which is now Compass and Red House Records because we acquired the Red House imprint, yeah, back in the end of last year.
Okay, good.
So that's been great. Eliza Gilkinson's got a new record. Dale Watson's got a new record. Those are both Red House artists that we're excited to be working with. And Gary West has been in the studio a bunch lately, my partner.
Yeah.
And producer and co-founder, and he just produced a new Mike Ferris record, which will be out in the fall, and a Pierce Pettis record, and just got back from Louisiana where he's working on a new record with Michael Doucet. So, So, yeah, there's just a lot of great music coming down the pike. It's really pretty exciting time.
What do you listen to when you're not playing, when you're not producing, when you're not performing, and when you're not wasting your time talking to people like me on the telephone with Allison
no,
Brown?
No, I really enjoy talking to you.
If you were just going to relax, what would you like? Okay, my day is done. I don't have to think about tomorrow's cuts or anything like that. What would you listen to?
I'm always thinking about what I want to do next artistically.
Well, that makes sense. That's a
yeah,
answer.
So like, you know, even when I'm not working, I'm still working. So it's a blessing and a curse, I guess, when the thing that you love to do is it's your passion, you know. So it's work and your passion, so you're always doing it. So I'm just like always listening to different kinds of things. I've been listening to Sharon Isbin's guitar playing a lot lately because I'd like to find something to collaborate with her on.
I finally got to see her about a year ago.
Yeah, she's great, huh?
I guess there are on par. We're talking about Sharon Isbin, classical guitarist, I would call her whenever I've seen her.
Yes, I would say so. Yeah. I met her at the Grammys a few years ago.
And oh, wow.
We played together in a band that was put together for the pre-Telecast Awards, kind of one of those weird odd bedfellow sort of bands that Neris came up with to play. And so that's how I met her. And I just emailed her a few months ago and asked her if she wanted to collaborate on something, and she's up for it. Lately I've been thinking about what would that be like.
What would that be like?
So I'm working on that.
You pull in so many great musicians, and this will lead us right into jumping into the song of the banjo. You pull in so many great and diverse musicians, and right before we started recording, we were talking about Steve Gadd, who immediately jumps to my mind as one of those everybody's greatest, maybe unknown, uncelebrated jazz percussionist. He's everywhere. He just did an album with Chick Corea, and you use him a lot on this new the song of the banjo. Now, how do you get people like that? How do you hear it and then pull them into this type of a project?
Well, so that one was really fortunate for me because Andrea Zahn, who's also on Compass Records, she's been a member of the James Taylor Band for the last 10 years, but before that, she is Alison Krauss's best friend growing up. So when I was playing with Alison, that's when I met Andrea. And Andrea's, played bluegrass, and she's played a lot of country artists. She played with Vince Gill for a long time, but her current gig is the James Taylor Band, and of course Steve plays drums in the James Taylor Band. So Andrea was making a new record right at the time I was starting Song of the Banjo, and she wanted to bring Steve into Nashville to play on her sessions, and so I was able to get like a couple days with Steve after that was done. So that was just super lucky for me, because he's such a legend that, when the other drummers in Nashville heard he was in town, people were just like driving up and down the alley behind the studio hoping to get a view of him. He's that kind of amazing.
He really is. And I pegged him in jazz, but he plays everything. He does everything so well. He's like, if you want a go-to drummer that's going to be – and honestly, if you put an album out and you're co-equal on the album with Chick Corea in the jazz field, you've pretty much proven that you deserve anywhere you want to be.
Yeah, and what's really funny is he'd never played banjo music before. And so, I didn't know, you never really know what it's going to be like to work with somebody like that. Like, you're trying not to be too starstruck. And just his generosity in the studio and just, like, really wanting, am I doing this right? Is this how banjo music is supposed to be played? And just having to explain to him that, we're just kind of carving our own path. So he was just really great. It was amazing.
On the song of the banjo, there are, I count, 13 songs. Yeah, I have a bonus track. I must have the extra super deluxe because I have What's Going On.
Because you're super deluxe kind of guy, yeah.
And seven of these I have as being tunes that you've written.
Yes, I think I wrote about half the record.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a little different for us. I mean, usually I've written almost all the music, but with this record we really wanted to try to, we kind of realized the more we've been out there playing banjo that a lot of people who aren't familiar with the banjo can't really understand what's happening just with all those notes, And so we thought that it would be like an interesting way to bring people in to the instrument by playing melodies that they're familiar with. So about half the record is cover cover tunes like Time After Time, where, you know, you can play a melody people know and then play it on the banjo, and then they can start to see what's so special about the banjo.
And, I mean, and your touch is so recognizable to me, and I don't think that it's just this, but we may have talked before, it's been a while since we chatted about it, is your position of your hand versus, you know, the bridge or away from the bridge. And, mm-hmm. and I hear a more mellow tone in a lot of, I have to ask you about, don't let me forget to ask what a low banjo is. I know what a banjola is, but when we get there, I need to ask. but you're so much of your tone seems to me, because it fits so well in a lot of these songs, and I've heard you really dig in and play, but can you explain to listeners, am I correct that, you know, Earl in his book said there's like the pedals of a piano, near close to the bridge and away from the bridge. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, you absolutely are. Oh, that's really interesting. I hadn't read where Earl said that, but it's true. I mean, depending on how close to the bridge your right hand is when you play, you can get like a really Ralph Stanley bluegrass kind of sound if you're right on the bridge. And as the closer you move towards the neck, the more mellow it gets. So the banjo does have a lot of different voices. And it's funny that you say that, because I just got one of Earl's banjos from the estate sale.
Oh, did you?
That they had recently. Yeah, I got his Vega Soloist banjo. Mm-hmm. And the head is really, really worn out, like right between the neck and the bridge, like that halfway point. And his son Gary told me that he used to sit around and play that banjo a lot without picks at home. And so, you know, so clearly, yeah, Earl was really aware of, like, the different places you can get a different kind of tone out of the banjo.
I think that's in his book, the five-string book, the one we all got back in the weight. I'm sure it's in the revised one also, but I think it may be back in the area where he's talking about remember that section where how you build a banjo, like...
Yes, yeah. You know, I skipped over that part.
Oh, I did too.
I just wanted to pick it. I didn't want to build one.
I did too, but I believe somewhere around that area he's talking about, it's like the pedals on a piano. And of course the thing is, it's not just one or the other. There's you can stop anywhere you want between them. You can actually go, if you're feeling bold, above where the frets start, but you're going to have to be extra clean. But yeah, so I hear that a lot. The song of the banjo, the very first tune, is one that you wrote. It's an instrumental. And it's this guy, it's got Stuart Duncan. There's so many great people. We already talked about Steve Gadd and Gary West, John Doyle and Joe Davidian. I do not know either one of those people.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joe Davidian, great, jazz piano player, just incredible chops. He was living in Nashville at the time, moved up to New York, but we toured some a few years back. Great player. And then John Doyle is also a compass artist. He is, I don't know, I would almost say he's reinvented Irish guitar. Everybody who's playing Irish guitar now is emulating John Doyle. He's an incredible technique and incredible stylist on Irish guitar. So what does that mean? What it means, what I've learned is that Irish music is different than bluegrass music in the sense that the improvisation happens in the rhythm more than in the melody. Bluegrass is different. It's like the guys who are playing the rhythm part, they're not improvising, they're just playing the chords. And the other soloists, they're improvising around the melody. But in Irish, it's kind of the opposite. And John just has this incredible sense for rhythm and harmony. And he's played on a bunch of my records, and in addition to playing on a lot of people's records and doing solo records. And he's just amazing. I really encourage you. I should send you some of his music so you can check it out.
I have to. Awesome. Yeah, I bet, because I know that Compass had, a while ago, acquired Green Linnet.
Yes, that was really a while ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago, but I remember. So that was good. That was a good thing for them, and I think a good thing to add to your catalog. But the opening song, then, the song of the banjo, is inspired by, we'll say, a Rudyard Kipling poem. And in the inside, the thing, you put the first stanza and the last stanza. And it actually is. I had to look the whole thing up. It's much longer than what you put, because it's much longer than what you could put inside. But it actually is written about, it's kind of the banjo is telling the story about traveling around and making that sound. And you had that you had that in mind when you came up with the album.
Well, so what I found so interesting about that piece of that poem, or the song of the banjo, that idea, was that poem was written in 1894. And that's a period of time during which the banjo was America's most popular instrument. And I just kept thinking about that fact, because the instrument has gotten so pigeonholed, like through the 20th century especially, and folks tend not to think about its deeper history through the 1800s and the fact that, you know, having a banjo in your parlor, you know, in 1894 was kind of like, I don't know. I mean, some people have said like having a leaf in your garage. I don't know. It was like a very cool thing to have. And banjo orchestras, you know, were everywhere in America. And demure young Victorian women were encouraged to play the banjo.
That's the instrument
of choice.
Yeah.
And so I just that whole moment in time, and then the fact that there was actually a poem from that time, it just kind of all tied it together for me.
It's a gorgeous tune, and I think it's a good choice to kick off the album. Then you go, like you mentioned earlier, there's a cover here of Dance With Me, which I think Orleans. I think
yes,
the original of that. You seem to have struck right in this I don't know if it's an age thing, but I remember all these things when they were on the radio, all the things we may hit on or not. But
yeah, I'm afraid it's an age thing.
Yeah. so you you have, of course, a lot of great players, and Rob Ikes joined you on this one. But what? Here's the thing, and I don't have to ask this on every tune, but why, again, it's the choices to me, not just the choices of the notes and how you play, which I'm always intrigued with, but also of all the tunes, and you want to do some covers to bring people into the banjo sound, as you mentioned earlier. But what was it about Dance With Me, if you remember, why that became a selection?
Yeah, I remember very well, because I love the sound of dobro and banjo playing together in the key of D. And there's something really great that happens, like, in that key for me. And I was teaching at Rocky Grass Academy a couple of years ago, and Rob was too, and we had to do one of these workshops in the afternoon, and it was like banjo dobro workshop, and we played that tune, and it was great. It just felt so good. So that really the tune was built around that conversation between the dobro and the banjo.
Have you recorded with the Indigo Girls before?
Yes, I have.
So.
They played, but they did Homeward Bound on my record, Stolen Moments.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Played on a few of their records, too, and I've done some live shows with them, so they're good pals.
They are, and then that leads me to the Michael Martin Murphy, Caroline in the Pines, where they join and sing, and I'm a big fan of the Indigo Girls. I've seen them, I don't know, every time they come through this area, I go find them, but I couldn't remember which one. I should have gone back and looked, but the Stolen Moments, you've recorded with them before and you do stuff with them, and I think I have the most recent thing they did where you show up accompanying on one of their tunes, and they are just, if the listeners out there in the bluegrass world or whoever might listen on Real Bluegrass don't recognize the Indigo Girls, they need to listen a little more. I mean, just the songs they write and the singing they do is just, and they're really good musicians, and they fit into many of those. That's why I always thought that is it Emily that plays all the different instruments?
They both do. Emily plays some banjo.
She
plays ukulele and stuff. Amy Ray plays some mandolin and guitars.
Yeah.
I mean, they both are pretty versatile instrumentally, and God, they write great songs.
That's
and maybe even better than all of that. They're just really great people.
I think so. Yeah, if you see them, it's not hard for them to express. Or it's not hard for you to pick up the genuine character that they have, because they talk what they live and they sing what they really feel and write about it. So that to me is another. Again, Caroline in the Pines is just it's one of those tunes you hear so many times, but you've taken and added some you added the organ to it. I don't know of a Hammond B3 organ in any other recording of Caroline in the Pines. And so you've added those things. It's a nice heavy sound. That organ, for the listeners out there, if you've heard of Jimmy Smith or Groove Holmes or any of those great jazz, that's usually where it pops up. It's a heavy, heavy sound. It's a big instrument, it's a heavy sound. What makes you want to pull in that type of an instrument into so many of the songs on the album that you do?
Sometimes there's some really nice thing that the B3 adds to a track. It's like you almost aren't really maybe even aware that it's there on some level, you know? It's just kind of this nice pad or texture in the background. Well, on Dance With Me, I think maybe there's an organ solo, but a lot of times, like, I've found myself when we were working on Missy's record, we cut a track a couple of months ago, and I tried to think that Mike Gary had just done a Mike Ferris session the day before, and I was doing a Missy session the next day, and Mark T. Jordan, the guy who plays B3 on Song of the Banjo, had left his briefcase in the studio after doing Mike's session. And so he came back during Missy's session, and I was like, God, this song needs B3 on it too. So I just handed him a chart, and he went and sat down and played it. It's just like one of those things where it doesn't need to be mixed up front or anything. It just adds like a nice,
it's a big bass.
It's a nice bass pad.
Yeah, it is. Pad's a big bass, and I don't mean by a bass sound, but it's like a, you're right, the pad. It's just like it's right there. You feel it all the time. And I looked him up right before we started. I looked him up before we started recording. And he's played with everybody again. You wind up pulling all these, and it goes back to Van Morrison on some of the things. I don't mean new Van Morrison. I mean like a while ago Van Morrison stuff.
No, I know. He's been around and done some amazing stuff. Well, you know, I'm so lucky to live in Nashville where there are all these people who with these incredible resumes that just love to make music and it just always blows me away the people you get in a room in Nashville and then how wonderful everybody is and how much everybody really just wants to play the music as well as they can, whatever the genre, you know, even if it has banjo on it.
Well, so far you've accidentally gotten Steve Gadd, and so far you've accidentally gotten Mark Jordan. And it makes it sound a whole lot easier than I think it really is. I think that if, were it not Alison Brown and Compass Red House, I don't know these people are just going to stumble into your... I mean, I don't want people to think they can just go to Nashville and say, hey, I need the best drummer in the world, and Steve Gadd shows up. You built up a lot of credibility is what I'm trying to say.
You know, there's an element of that, but honestly, you know, they're also working musicians, and that's their job.
Well, that's true. You're right.
And so, you know what I mean? And so as long as the music is credible music, you know, it's really... when I first started making my own records, I was like, what? You mean Sam Bush will play on my record or whoever? And then you just come to realize, I mean, that's what we all do. We make music. That's our job.
Yeah, that's true.
So if there's a session, you do the session.
The next two cuts on the Song of the Banjo are two that you wrote, instrumentals, A Long Way Gone. And I think I want to say the fifth cut is, I'm going to say Wind and Sea.
Yeah, Wind and Sea, exactly.
Okay. All right. And it just occurred to me, is that like Wind and Sea? Just all crunched into one word, or just happened to look at it that way?
I can't remember. It's named after a place in La Jolla where I grew up. It's one of the really good surfing beaches.
Okay, well then, a long way gone, that's you and you have Stuart Duncan again, who you two go back quite a way.
Quite a ways, yeah.
back in the early days.
Yeah, I met him right after Richmond fell. It was a long time ago.
Yeah. I got to look that. I remember when that happened in the books, but I don't remember exactly when. So again, I don't know. A Long Way Gone. You can talk about the instrumentals if you want. You can just take those two and go from them. But when you get to Wind and Sea, I don't know Christian Settlemyer.
Oh, okay. Well, yes. So Christian Settlemyer is kind of one of the up-and-coming fiddle players. He's in a group called Ten String Symphony. You may know of those guys. And he's also a member of the Jerry Douglas Band. In fact, I saw him at Merlefest.
Oh, is this the What If
Band? Was that last weekend?
Is this the What If? The What If thing that Jerry's doing?
Yeah, well, I guess if that's what it's called, is his current kind of jazz.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah,
and
I did see him
at Grey Fox because I was at the side of the stage when they played the album up there.
Yeah, great player. I love playing with Christian. Just a great drive, and I really wanted to find a spot for him on the record. So while he was in town.
And fill the audience in. If you just tuned in and listen to Alison Brown, which I'm always thrilled to do, and we're talking ostensibly about the Song of the Banjo, and we've talked about some other things related to recording and what she's been doing since the Song of the Banjo came out. But if you want to take, I want to get to Time After Time. There's some really neat covers, but I don't want for a minute skip over original compositions.
A Long Way Gone,
Wind and Sea. But if you want to go back and pick up A Long Way Gone, I'll let you address that. We've talked a little bit about Wind and Sea as it relates to a fiddle player you brought into it, but maybe the tone of what you were trying to write with A Long Way Gone.
Yeah, the tone of what I was trying to write to that, that tune has sort of an interesting origin. I was down in the French West Indies a few Christmases ago, and Steve Martin, the other Steve Martin, not the other Steve Martin, but the other Steve
The
Martin,
other one, the first one.
Was down there too, and he always had his banjo with him, and so we got together one afternoon, and he loves to play in the key of C. So we sat around in this beautiful island playing banjo tunes in the UFC, and then I went back to where I was staying, where we were staying, and I kind of came up with the A section of this tune. And I had it sitting around for a long time and just could never really figure out where to go. Like, I wanted to go somewhere different, not just, like, predictably to the four chord or whatever, which maybe is what I ended up doing, but trying to think of someplace different to go. And then as I was working on this record and thinking about the legacy of the banjo through the 1800s, I started to think about this tune as being trying to kind of be something that would have resonated with people who fought during the American Civil War, during which there were some major battles fought in and around Nashville. And West Nashville is pretty much part of the battlefield of, it is the battlefield of the Battle of Nashville. It took place in 1864. So as I tried to flesh out the rest of the tune, I tried to evoke that sort of feeling.
Well, I'm glad I asked you. Wind and Sea, you already said, is at least named after a famous surfing beach. And we talked about one of the players you've joined in, but you had a pretty good story about a long way gone, so I'm going to see what your story is for Wind and Sea before we get to Time After Time.
Yeah, no good story on that one.
No, just a good tune.
Yeah, well, I hope you'd like the tune.
Yeah. Well, let's get then to the Time After Time. There's Time After Time, there's a Burke Bacharach tune, which I will tell you, when I get an album, I listen to it before I read anything about it. In it, I immediately thought of Elvis Costello, and I kept waiting for him to say, and on piano is Burke Bacharach, because in the Austin Myers movie,
that's right, yeah.
It's like, oh my God, it's Elvis Costello and Burke Bacharach. But
yeah,
and then what's going on, and it feels so good. You sample all sorts of things in here, but the next one after the first two, Time After Time, has become such... so much more than people thought when it was a pop tune. I think it's become so much more. Maybe it was automatically that, but why did you choose Time After Time? I may have an idea why you did.
Well, it's beautiful, and it lays so well on the banjo that I almost feel like I could teach anybody to play that beginning melody on the banjo. It's just right under your fingers. And I don't know, I just really, even when we play that tune live, you know, people sing along with it. It's just so much a part of the American vernacular now.
I think it is. I think when it first hit, it was. Cyndi Lauper was certainly outside the box, but I think that her songwriting and really the message she was getting, it became so much more prevalent than just hearing the tune on the radio. I think a lot of, she did a blues album a couple of years ago, which was phenomenal, called Memphis, and that's when I realized, oh, she can pretty much do whatever she wants to singing-wise. But the Time After Time, you're right, it's an absolutely gorgeous song. And then stuff happens. The seventh is just a real funky tune to me.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that was Gary gave me the challenge of writing a tune that didn't have so many changes. It was just like, can't you just go to one chord and wait? Of course, that's the bass player talking, you know. And so that tune grew out of my attempt to write a tune that didn't have so many changes. Of course, it ended up with a bunch of changes in it. But when we were cutting it in the studio and Steve started playing that, you know, that drum part that he came up with, it just reminded Gary of the tunes of the band Stuff that Steve used to be in.
Oh, okay.
Which is why the tune is called Stuff Happens.
Jeepers, criminy. All right, good. All right,
yeah.
I understand now. I forgot that to you, because, and actually Stuff is kind of in italics in the title, which should have been a clue that it meant more than just the first part of a song. All right. And then you get right to the, I've never heard on a banjo album a Burke Bacharach tune. You have I'll Never Fall in Love Again, and that's Colin Hay. Isn't he on Compass also?
Yes, he's been on Compass for, gosh, since the early 2000s.
Yeah, and he, go ahead.
Oh, and I was just going to say, well, I was working on the record, and he was over for dinner. He was in town from L.A., and we were sitting around the table having dinner, and he started talking about how much he and his sister, when he was growing up, used to love Burt Bacharach's music and would sing his songs together. So I'm like, well, I've always loved Never Fall in Love Again, so why don't we just try to cut it tomorrow? So we did.
And he might be more recognizable in what band setting?
Oh, well, Men at Work.
Yeah.
Those guys were at the top of the top of the top.
Yeah. And now his voice is so, his voice is really, it's a gorgeous song, and everybody out there knows I'll Never Fall in Love Again. It's a gorgeous treatment of it, but his singing is just really, you wouldn't think this was the guy that was talking about From the Land Down Under. I mean, his voice is really, is it matured or just maybe
It's a great instrument, you know. Yeah. And we cut that track at 10 o'clock the next morning after sitting around, you know, whatever, having dinner and drinking wine at night the night before. And he just walked in at, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning and opened his mouth, and that's what came out.
And you know, on this one, you play a banjola. I have one of those. Tell the audience quickly, if you can, what the difference between it is. We're going through this, a banjola and a banjo.
Well, for my banjola, I don't know if yours is the same. It's made out of wood.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no metal parts on except like the tuners. It's really more guitar-like, but it's got five strings. You can play it just like a banjo, but the body is all wood.
Yeah, that's mine. That's what I have. Arish is a tune that you wrote, and then you follow that with a Chuck Mangione tune. But talk a little about, I think I'm saying it correctly, Arish.
Yeah, Arish. It's an old Appalachian word. That was a tune that I think John Doyle was over for dinner and helped finish one night. But that's kind of probably the most Celtic-leaning tune on the record.
Well, and the reason I ask about the way I'm pronouncing it is that, was I missing a play on Irish? Was I missing, you know, what was
Oh,
that?
Yeah, perhaps.
And maybe that is what the Appalachians say for Irish.
No, I'm trying to remember. I think the Irish means it's a fresh breeze.
Makes more sense. Yeah. Feels so good, then, and you go to Chuck Mangione.
Yeah, why not, right?
Yeah, well, we're yeah.
Kind of, we're breaking all the rules.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get to, the point that the Song of the Banjo, you have all these wonderful samples, which means you listen to all these things. And Chuck Mangione, you bring in a special guest on this one, on ukulele.
Teach Him at the Coro,
yeah. Talk a little bit about this one.
Well, let's see. Gosh, there's so much to say about that. When we cut it, with Steve, and Steve Gadd, and he was talking about how he's been best friends with Chuck since they were really like kids.
Yeah.
They grew up together, and Steve happened to mention that he was playing that tune at one of Chucky's weddings. I think that's what he said.
Sure.
And that Chuck always really liked it as a ballad. And so that kind of informed the approach that we took. You know, and saving that jam, like that C-section jam thing for the end, and kind of trying to make it more ballad-like. But, you know, as far as Jake Shim of Bokoro, I'm a huge fan of what he's done with the ukulele, and he's a great player, and he's a great guy. And that was, it would have been great if he could have done that track with us in Nashville, but his wife was expecting a baby any day. And so he actually did that, his part, from his studio in Honolulu, and we did it on a Skype session. So we were, like, in the studio with him, except that we were in Nashville. But we were able to listen to what he was doing, so he could kind of say, yeah, play more there, or, you know, try a twin line there or whatever. So it was the technology wasn't perfect. It probably would be better now, but it was still good enough to, you know, make it feel like it was interactive.
Did you record off of the Skype, or did he send you an MP3 of it?
Yeah, so we sent him the tracks, and he overdubbed the track but while we were on a Skype session. So we were actually watching him do his overdub.
Gotcha, okay.
Talking to him,
okay.
So it was pretty cool.
Because I was going to say, you had a really good Skype connection, if you could do that.
Yeah, no, I'm not that good.
Okay. The next two, the 12th tune, Musette for the Last Fret, is just you and Joe Davidian, and that's an instrumental and a rather quick one. Is that actually what you're doing is for the listening audience playing is it actually a tune on the last fret, or what do you mean by that?
Right. So that tune I wrote for the banjo that I played most of the record on. It's a Pruka banjo with an extended fingerboard, and Jaroslav Pruka made it for me, and he's based out of Prague in the Czech Republic, making great banjos. And I've been playing his banjos since around 2002. And a few years ago, he said that he was going to make me a new banjo, and what would I like on it, and how would I like it to be. And I told him I really wanted the extra frets, you know, an extended fingerboard. You can play two octaves of a D scale, basically. And he kind of looked askance at me like, you know, what do you really need those? Right, you really need those extra frets just because Noam Bakilny has it, or what do you want that for? And so I took that as a challenge to write a tune that would use the last frets. And so that was the tune I wrote. So it's kind of like I had the punchline and then I had to write the joke. So that tune is all leading up to the last note, which is that high D.
The moon in Molly's eyes precedes that. And then we've already mentioned Andrea Zahn and the connection with you and Steve Gadd and all these other interesting threads we're pulling through. Todd Phillips, I don't know that we've talked about Todd Phillips on bass, and then we again have Joe Davidian and Steve Gadd and you. But the moon in Molly's eyes. Most of the time, Allison, when I've asked you about songs that have a name in the title, I'm going to set you up for this, and you can take it wherever you want. Usually they're identified with a person. Doesn't have to be, and this doesn't have to be, but it seems like every time I stumble across one of those, there's an actual real person that you've identified.
Yes, this in this case is an actual black cat. We, years ago at Compass, before we knew better, took in a stray black cat that was our office cat. And she was very spirited and had a great personality. And she was, you know, a dark black cat with big yellow eyes. And it was amazing how many people are allergic to cats. That's really what we,
that's
one of the
right.
lessons that we
right.
took away from right. having an office cat. But she stayed in the office for many years. And then when after she passed away, I wanted to write her a tune. And I wrote the A section to that tune a long time ago, and then I needed to figure out where to go with it, and finally did, and so that's that tune. But that's why it's called The Moon in Molly's Eyes.
Very good. My dog's name is Molly. I didn't think you wrote it about my dog, but I recognize that it could have been a pet's name, but I wanted you to answer the question anyway.
Well, there you go.
And the last, my bonus track, because I have the Super Deluxe Edition, is Keb Moe and the rest of everyone else playing in, but it's Marvin Gaye. It's What's Going On, which, by the way, if you listen to that album today, he was on to something back in those times. On almost every one of those songs, they could still be done today and written today and sung, but you chose What's Going On, which is kind of his ecology. The whole album is like that, about the ecology and things going on, but you chose that, and you had Keb Moe to sing this. It's just absolutely phenomenal. I love that song so much, and I love what you've done with it on this album.
Well, thank you. We almost were afraid to do that song because it is such a song. It's such a big song. But you're right. I mean, the message of that song is as relevant as it was when he wrote it during the Chicago race riots.
Yeah.
And so we cut the track and, you know, trying to figure out what to do with it. And kind of like, well, I you know, recently met Keb Moe, and I'm like, What if I asked Keb Moe if he would want to do this? And so we sent him the track, and he loved it. And he said, I'll be there tomorrow at 10.
What?
And so he just came in and sang it. He's like, he thought it was such a cool track. He said that he just didn't want someone else to sing it and mess it up. So he came and sat down and just brought it. You know, it was amazing.
So we now know that everything happens at 10 o'clock at Compass Records.
Well, see, yeah, you're like, not everything. It's always a loose 10, anyway.
All right. Well, it's a great, and again, that whole time frame, and I kind of get the ballpark of the tunes you're selecting, and what's going on. I think is a perfect bonus track. You have to get the bonus Super Deluxe Edition to get it, but boy, it really is just, it's just dead on still. We talked about the timeliness of the issues involved in it. And really, that whole album, if you go back and listen to the whole album, it touches on things that could be right now. Every one of the cuts on there could be right now, done by Marvin Gaye. So I was thrilled by your choices on all these things, and especially What's Going On. So I'm glad it wavered it ways into the deluxe edition, at least, that it got it under the wire.
No, thanks. I appreciate that.
You do you have anything? You're so busy, I know, with Compass, and I've taken more time than I promised you that I would.
No, it's all good.
And I know you're producing more things. And what about under the Allison Brown? Do you have anything coming up in the future that would be like
yes.
this? Good.
Yes, I don't know what it's going to be like yet. I mean, I'm working on a couple of different things. One thing that will fit under the bluegrass heading better than my band stuff is that Stuart Duncan, who you mentioned, we go way back. We mm-hmm. really go way back. When we were just finishing up high school, we made a record together called Pre-Sequel.
I remember that.
And do you remember
that? I've
heard
that.
Yeah. So that was a long time ago. And for a while now, we've been talking about making the follow-up record, which is called Sequel. Well, see, we named it when we made the first record. So that's a project that we're working on, and hopefully get it done here before the end of the year, I hope. And then for the quartet, yeah, we've just been doing some shows with this amazing flute player from New York. His name is John Ragusa. And the flute adds so much to the music. It's like I've recorded with flute before, but playing live with flute's just been amazing. So I'm working on some new music for that configuration, and then maybe some more kind of oddball, you know, small group things and collaborations, like hoping to do something with Sharon Isbin and talking to Jens Kruger about maybe doing a duet kind of thing. So, you know, a few things off the beaten path.
Again, see, it's these choices that you're reaching out and you're able to bring to life. And I love these choices that you're making. And the last 30 seconds you just told me is like, if I hadn't already thought you have great wisdom and choices involved. If people want to find you somewhere live, I assume that you have a website. They can check that out.
Yes, AllisonBrown.com. They can look at it. And Compass Records site usually is supposed to have all that stuff up to date, too. Yeah, so if we're not out on the road, we're in the studio making more records for other people and just trying to keep the folk tradition alive.
You are so busy, Allison. Thanks so much for your time. Our paths have crossed many times since the Song of the Banjo came out, and there's just so much going on. And I was very happy to have a chance to talk to you about that and other things that have happened subsequent to its release. And thank you so much for your time. I know you're awfully busy.
Yeah. No, of course. Thank you so much for your time and for your support and interest in eclectic banjo music. It takes a special person to be interested in that.
at least a different person. I wouldn't go so far as to say special. But.
Oh, I'd say special. So thank you.
Well, listen, I'll let you go, and I'll see you down the road somewhere.
Sounds great, Steve.
Thanks,
Allison.
All right, bye-bye.
You betcha. Bye-bye.